Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host, as usual. And today I have a great guest, Spencer Hecht from Hecht & Associates. Spencer is a local attorney here in the Washington, D.C. area who has gone from solo practitioner to what I would call a small law firm with three associates and a couple of paralegals and other staff. So a full service now firm that focuses in on family law exclusively. And I was particularly interested in talking with Spencer because he is a really good example, in my opinion, of someone who has grown his firm piece by piece and now has, as I said, this established balanced practice. I was particularly interested in discussing with him the concept of staffing, how he went about staffing his office, when he knew it was time to hire an associate, how he went about doing so, and how he compensates his staff and how he brings them into the fold through an incentive program and does, as he likes to say, give them some skin in the game. So it's an interesting discussion here with Spencer, and I hope you enjoyed as much as I did having him on the show. So without any further delay, here is Spencer Hecht. Spencer Hecht, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Good to be here.
Well, thanks for taking the time to be with me today, Spencer. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Sure, I'd be happy to, Neil. Again, Spencer Hecht, and I am a lifelong resident of this area, and I always knew that I wanted to come back to the area after receiving education and establish a law firm and a practice here. And so I live locally in the Rockville Potomac area, and our office is located in the Rockville Town Square on Rockville Pike, which makes it easy for clients to access us and those sort of things. And we run what I would describe as a boutique family law firm. We have had as many as five attorneys work for us right now. We have a total of three, and that sort of ebbs and flows over the years in an effort to just build the best team possible. So that's sort of our post-it note version of the type of practice that we have.
Sure. Now, I'm curious as to why you identify as a boutique family law practice.
You know, I look at the word boutique, or I interpret the word boutique as a niche practice, one that doesn't focus on other areas of law, and one where the client, it's really a comprehensive, intimate relationship with the clients. We do not run a factory, as they say, in terms of the client base and the number of clients that we service. Many of our divorce cases or custody cases are on the complex side that deal with business valuations and custody evaluations and those sorts of things. And so I just view it as a very intimate relationship between our attorneys and their clients. And that could be certainly the case for lots of law practices, but that's how I've come to interpret it.
And I'm gathering from all of that, you kind of also see yourself as very much a client-oriented practice.
Yes, it's been, in my experience, the clients need guidance, they need protection, they need to be able to trust who is representing them on these very delicate, sometimes life-altering or changing or profound areas in their lives. This is not suing somebody for money. This is typically dealing with children and the dissolution of a marriage, which can be acrimonious or not so acrimonious. But in terms of client-centered, I think it's always very important to make sure, in addition to ensuring that the clients have the protection and guidance that they need and knowing about the process, but also knowing that they are very much a part of the fabric of our everyday practice. And so it's been my experience that an overabundance of client contact is typically much better than less contact, so that the client understands that they are important to you. I always say that regardless of the size of the case, that every client is treated the same. And that's always been an important principle for me.
Now, have you always focused on family law, or did you start off in more practice areas or other practice areas?
Well, with me, let's see. I started the firm in 2005, so it's been 12 years. And for me, just like with most people who start their own practice, it was a matter of timing. I was working with smaller firms, and there happened to be clients that I was working closely with. And it just, as with everything else in life, was a matter of timing. When you typically, in my experience, and certainly for me, starting out was one of these eat what you kill mentality. And so we started as a general practice litigation firm that did handle not only family cases but contract cases and torts and you know, personal injury cases. But over time, and when I say time, I would probably characterize it as 2 to 3 years. The practice area of family law, divorce, custody, and child support, which are sort of the three big components of family law, started to resonate with my personality and my organizational skills and my interests and my desire to sort of help people get through a difficult period in their lives and all those sorts of things. So we weren't always family law centered, but it didn't take long for us to, or for me, I think at that point, to realize that that was, without sounding cliche, my calling, I think.
So you evolved into a family law practice.
Quite frankly, I couldn't imagine doing anything else at this point. We call it organized chaos, But it is an area that touches everybody's lives in one way or another, and I think it's incredibly important, just as other practice areas are. But for me, I couldn't imagine doing anything else.
Indicated that you knew you always wanted to return to this area after going through law school. Did you always know that you wanted to run your own firm?
No, and again, I think that timing is everything. When you're working for a firm and you're getting a paycheck and you're servicing clients and you're managing the work-life balance and all those sorts of things, there's a lot of security involved in that. And, you know, taking the step to form your own firm and the risks that are involved in that is something that I wouldn't say nobody thinks of. I certainly didn't think that was my calling or something that I wanted to do right out of law school. I think that my law school thesis was in copyright and intellectual property. So certainly it wasn't
on the horizon then.
No, it certainly wasn't. And I think it's just, it was timing and kind of settling in and being exposed to different types of law and understanding what the best fit was for me and my personality. I really do believe that. I think that while there is a lot of law surrounding family law and other practice areas, it also needs to be the right fit for your disposition and your personality. That's for sure.
Yeah, I think that's particularly true in family law. Mostly you hear folks say, oh, I could never do that because of the personalities involved. And the ones who are successful in it are the ones who find satisfaction in doing so are the ones who really can't think of themselves doing anything else in law. So I think family law finds its own advocates.
Absolutely. I mean, the family law bar is small, and it's small for good reason. There are, and I think you just alluded to it, there are plenty of people that you and I know that would not hesitate in saying that they would never do family law, no matter how much it paid. And that just speaks to this type of law being for some, but not all. And it takes a special type of person, whether you want to call it a glutton for punishment or something sort of in between, to really sort of deal with people's problems on, you know, family problems on a day-to-day basis. It is not something for everybody, that's for sure.
So there had to come a point in time where you said, you know what, I think I could do this on my own. I think I want to open my own firm. Or as I sometimes say, I jumped first and then looked around afterwards to see where I landed. Do you remember what triggered that thought in your mind about starting your own practice?
I think the best thing that I can pinpoint now, 12 years removed from starting my own firm, is the idea that, and this is no slight on the firms that I happened to be employed by before starting my own firm, but, you know, there was a period of time where I had my clients that I serviced in one capacity or another and became very close to them, and they started to entrust me with their personal lives and their domestic problems and those sorts of things. And, you know, the light bulb goes off sometimes that says, essentially, you know, I can do this on my own. And that's might be short-sighted in sort of the a broader sense of doing things on your own, because obviously that doesn't account for overhead and support staff and all the types of things that we have to deal with as, you know, our solo practitioners. But there was a moment where, you know, I think everybody who goes out on their own says, hey, I can do this, you know, and I think that happened towards the end of my last tenure with my last job, just you know, having a handful of clients to have some level of security in terms of retainers and making sure that I had enough clients and work to keep me through the day and those sorts of things. And that's when you know that this can really happen. A lot of people, I think, go out on their own. At least I've heard stories without some sort of client base. And, you know, that just creates more risk, which is something that we all try to avoid.
Well, it certainly is true. It always is better to bring your own clients into the fray to start with. So tell us a little bit, what did the firm look like initially when you started? and how has it changed over the course of time? You said at one point you've been as many as five associates, and now you're down to about three. How has that changed, and what's motivated some of those changes?
Well, let's see. So I started in 2005 from my one-bedroom apartment in Washington, D.C. Of course, it wasn't Hecton Associates then, or it was Hecton Associates without the actual associates. And I would meet with, I am barred to practice in at colleagues' offices or in the downstairs conference room of my apartment building, and I would try to service clients that way. I was set up. There was a period of time when I had set up a small infrastructure in terms of firm management software and sort of learning how to do things from an administrative standpoint and that. Happened for some time, and then I matriculated to an office sharing situation with another practitioner in downtown Silver Spring. And ultimately, the firm grew to the point where I needed to have more space than just an office and a reception desk for an employee. And so then I moved to another space in Silver Spring, downtown Silver Spring, which at that point was the epicenter of all of our practice areas and jurisdictions. We were going out as far east as Anne Arundel County and as far south as Charles County or St. Mary's County. I was practicing in the District of Columbia and obviously Montgomery County and Prince George's County. So Silver Spring seemed to be sort of the epicenter of where all the clients, you know, were located and sort of the epicenter of the jurisdictions that we were handling. After I entered into my second space sharing scenario, we began to grow even more, and the need for paralegals began to increase, and the need for associates began to increase, and ultimately we decided to move and had enough clients and enough employees to move to our own space in downtown Silver Spring, where we stayed for, I think it was 6 years in total, for a, you know, for one lease term. And then we moved over to Rockville, and that has just kind of been a blessing. You know, once you start pricing out different options, you realize what's out there and what's out there for you, and the opportunities that come along with that. And being in Rockville has only enhanced our practice, because over time we have more of the Montgomery County clients have resonated and started to be represented by us than before, only because we're now sort of in downtown in the heart of Rockville.
So for our listeners who are not in our current area, all of this has to do with jurisdictions in and around the suburbs of Washington, D.C. And now where Spencer has moved his offices, as you heard, in Rockville, which is the county seat and is where the circuit court is located. So if nothing else, from a logistics standpoint, being closer to the circuit court where the family law docket is maintained, that certainly has to increase your efficiency, if not, you know, decreasing your individual personal hassle about getting around town.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think I have, even though I knew moving into our current space would create some benefits, I never imagined that it would be as convenient and helpful to our efficiency levels as it has been. When we were in Silver Spring, it was a 20-minute drive to the circuit court, a 20-minute drive back to the office.
On a good day.
On a good day, and being able to walk across the street to the courthouse, we have the idea of having a daily run to filing run to the courthouse was foreign to us in Silver Spring, not because we didn't have the manpower to do it, but because efficiently, it just wasn't that efficient in terms of spending the manpower to do that. And so having more access to court filings, to court jackets, to the judges, quite frankly, if need be, on an expedited basis, all of that stuff, it sort of comes along with, I guess, the firm growing and being in a position to, be in the space that we are.
So, for a lot of people, solo practitioners and small firm practitioners, the $64,000 question about growing their firm seems to always have to do with staffing. And people say, I need to add more staff, or I want to add more staff. I feel like the workload can support that, but they're often hesitant to do that because they haven't run the financial numbers and haven't figured out whether or not it's financially prudent to do so. Did you go through that process, or was it just a gut feel you knew? Now is the time to add an associate, or now is the time I need to add a paralegal?
Well, that's a great question. I think that any solo practitioner can attest to the hours that one puts in order to service their clients. When those hours become impossible or not viable in order to strive for any work balance, work-life balance, then I think just from a practical standpoint, it makes sense to add employees. And ultimately, the idea is that employees and ones that are billing time are a good return on your investment from a billing versus salary standpoint. But for our firm, certainly our payroll is the highest of our overhead expenses, and it is something that we are always keeping our eye on. Our second highest expense per year is marketing. And so those are the types of things that we always need to keep an eye on to make sure that there is a a good return on the investment, because if there's not, then it doesn't make sense. And that's why there has been ebbs and flows with the associates and the staff over time. Sometimes, like now, it is an opportunity for us to handle more complex cases, more cases that involve business valuations and custody evaluations and those sorts of things. But sometimes it's a matter of workflow and making sure that, you know, there's enough work for everybody. And so, I always say that family law and divorce is sort of recession proof, but that doesn't mean that the ebbs and flows don't happen with respect to workflow.
Yeah. Well, you know, I had a mentor one time tell me I was lucky to be an attorney because I only needed to work half a day. And when pressed, he said, you just have to figure out which 12 hours that's going to be.
Right.
So the decision to add staff was more or less a gut feel based on your workload. Now, to the extent you're comfortable sharing this information, Spencer, how did you structure the compensation? Do you pay your attorneys a salary? Do they have a bonus package or a profit sharing package? Because I think a lot of attorneys trying to figure out, how can I do this that in a way that works for both me as the firm owner and the associate as the employee?
Sure. Well, Neil, as you know, nobody teaches you how to run a law practice in law school. So a lot of this is for solo practitioners and for small firm owners. This is a trial by fire, no pun intended, and, figuring out things as you go and asking a lot of questions from predecessors and people that came before us that have gone through this type of, you know, growth and, understanding that usually salaries are commensurate with experience. That is, I think, a big gauge in our field. If somebody is out of law school 2 or 3 years or 9 or 10 years, that may make a difference in their salary. But we all know that being out of law school is one thing. Having the experience in the courtroom is something much different. So, you know, there are all, well, let me say this. We have, over time, we've had junior associates that that have been out of law school, say 1 to 3 years. Then we've had sort of your normal associate that's been out of law school 5, 6, or 7 years, and those are the people that, or the associates that will hopefully have some trial experience, some experience with the law, with the rules of evidence, as opposed to your perfunctory hearings that you have in any practice area, really. And then we've had senior associates, and the senior associates are ones that are obviously compensated more because they come with a level of experience that the others don't. And there is, we try to incentivize our employees as much as we can. I realize that not every law firm does that. We do offer a percentage of the fee that's collected to the originating attorney. Now, it's never been my position that any type of associate, whether it's junior or senior, or something in the middle, has an obligation to the firm to try and network and bring in business. I always thought that to be sort of my wheelhouse and how I wanted the firm to run. But nevertheless, there are certainly times when I'm in court and unavailable to meet with potential new clients, or there are times when there are direct referrals to the other associates in the office, and those are certainly well within the confines of our compensation structure as it relates to what I would characterize as a commission over and above salary and, you know, benefits. And I think that gives people skin in the game, and it makes them want to grow with the firm, as opposed to getting a pat on the back and realizing that they don't really get anything out of, they don't have any incentive to bringing in clients and helping the firm grow. So that's something that I think is also a good return on the investment, which is giving employees some skin in the game.
I am an absolute firm believer in that, because I think if you want to grow any business, your staff has to be motivated to make it happen. And if it's just a paycheck that they're getting, oftentimes that's just the kind of performance you get. This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Market Circle, the makers of Daylight. Do you want to help more clients but don't have the resources? Do you feel overwhelmed by the amount of work to do that you can't even think about getting new clients? If this is you, I urge you to try out Daylight. Daylight is the Mac CRM that streamlines your practice and can save you hours of work each week. Daylight has helped thousands of small businesses, including my own, to manage more clients and cases without adding stress nor chaos. With Daylight, you don't need to fumble through files or notes to know where you are in a case. There's no more CCing your assistant on emails or passing around spreadsheets. Because Daylight now has a new team view that helps you see what everyone in your firm is working on. You can see everyone's appointments and tasks and easily schedule meetings for the entire team or a portion thereof. To learn how Daylight can help your firm, visit marketcircle.com/daylight. Be sure to let them know you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. That's Market Circle, the makers of Daylight. In addition, I want to tell you about my friends at Spotlight Branding. I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They build a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to keep me top of mind with my referral network. And this helps me generate more referrals and more business for my firm. Their services are designed to help lawyers get better results out of the resources they're already investing into marketing and business development. They create an internet foundation that makes all of your marketing work better. That's because these days, almost every potential client is going to check out your web presence before they hire you. It's important that you create a strong first impression. And that's what Spotlight Branding has done for me, and they can do it for you too. So visit spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for our podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE.
You know, in a small firm environment, whether you're dealing with a solo who's got a paralegal and a receptionist, or you're dealing with some firm like mine that's got anywhere between 6 and 10 employees, you need everybody to buy in because you're working with these people, you know, all the time. And it's an intimate, hopefully collegial environment. And you want everybody to be happy and you want everybody to be incentivized by making the firm successful. And the idea that these employees, again, in this small firm solo context, can grow with the firm and that there really doesn't need to be a ceiling for even support staff, I think is something that's enticing to people.
Right. Couldn't agree more. What then has been your biggest challenge as you've gone through these various growth stages?
I always say that servicing the clients and representing the clients is hard enough. And when I say that,
isn't that the truth?
I mean that there are always administrative tasks, always the idea of collecting from clients about, you know, managing employees and making sure that their tasks are prioritized. And all of those things take time out of actually representing the client. So, you know, even though we have somebody that manages the office, even though we have paralegals, in a firm that's really not that big, you still want your thumb print on or on the pulse of what is going on and helping people and mentoring people and managing the firm and managing all the vendors that we deal with and that service us. And so it's just a matter of, I think, I don't know that it's challenging. It's just very time consuming.
So would time management be a fair characterization of the challenge that a firm like yours faces?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, you know, if I could sit down and either draft motions and pleadings and discovery all day and then go to court when, you know, a file was handed to me, it would be a lot different than what I'm doing now, which is, sometimes the motions and pleadings need to wait until you're done with all your meetings and you're done telling, you know, coordinating with your staff about what's most important and prioritizing. It is a constant effort, or there is a constant effort to make sure that everybody's on the same page. And again, that takes time. That takes time out of your day.
What role does technology play in your practice?
Great question. I wish that I was more technologically savvy than I am, but we just migrated to cloud, and that has been helpful for employees to be able to work remotely when needed, and to be able to pull documents and emails from the cloud.
When you say you migrated to the cloud, do you have a case management system that is located, that is cloud-based, or?
Yes, okay. Yes. So everything is cloud-based. We are.
So what do you use for case management?
So everybody has a laptop, and we use a remote desktop connection to dial into our server wherever we may be. And PC Law, which is a NexisLexis, I believe, product, is what I've used over time. It's a very user-friendly firm management software program. And it's one that I was familiar with in my former life as an employee in a law firm, in a small law firm. So it was something that was easy for me to transition to, and one that's easy for the employees to record their time in and those sorts of things. I don't use it for its full capabilities, but I certainly use it for managing the money that's in escrow, in our IALTA accounts and in our operating accounts and billable time and all those sorts of things.
Are you billing out through PC Law as well?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So all the billing goes through PC Law. The billing and recording the billing from the clients and from the associates that are handling those clients is something that is time consuming for me, because I am the one at the end of each day to take everybody's time and input it into PC Law. And you may think, well, why don't the associates do that themselves? And the answer really is that this is the way that I've always done it. It's a way for me to better keep, my eye on the work that's being done, to make sure that we are billing clients the appropriate amount of time for the work that's being done. And rather than review billing at the end of the month and it taking a much longer period of time, time recording for me is about a half hour out of my day. It's usually the last thing that I do to make sure that all of the time is in from everybody. But that seems to have worked. It's probably not the most efficient thing. But again, I think it goes to time management. We want things done, and we want things done a particular way, because that's what's made us successful. And it's right. It's some things that work that we just don't want to deviate from, because you know what they say: if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So, it does take some time out of my day, but it is important for me that time gets inputted in real time, and that if there are any adjustments that need to be made, they don't slip through the cracks until the billing cycle. So then you're dealing with 100 clients that need tweaking to their bills, as opposed to keeping up with it, contemporaneously.
Now, along the way, you mentioned that marketing was a challenge. What do you do in terms of marketing Hecton Associates?
So I believe, and this is through the different consultants that we've used over the years, that Hecton Associates was essentially a trailblazer in the law firm internet marketing space. And there are two ways in which that occurs: through search engine optimization or SEO, which is the optimization of your website through link building and through blogging and through page strength and those sorts of things that we use outside vendors for. And then there is the Google pay-per-clicks ads, which deal with bidding on certain key terms that users are typing into Google or Yahoo or Bing, and your firm and your website is coming up under the sponsored links portion of Google that you see at both the top and the right side of the screen when you Google a certain term. So there are a ton of analytics that Google uses, that consultants use from Google, and it has become a big part of our practice. I would say that we're probably about 50% referral, 50% internet marketing. That ebbs and flows as well. But for the most part, it has. And again, the internet marketing is something that you have to consider the return on the investment, which is something that has grown over the years. I mean, our ad spend now is certainly not what it used to be, you know, 10 years ago. And that's just a product of growth and also the sort of the saturation of lawyers and law firms using the internet to attract clients.
Well, we've had a couple of episodes devoted entirely to either SEO and or content marketing or Google AdWords. And, you know, I think the advantage that you have or the success that you've realized has a lot to do with the fact that you were in that space early. It's much more difficult now for small firms to take advantage of those technologies, in my humble opinion. I think it's a little more difficult now than it was 10 years ago. So it's terrific that that's worked for you and continues to work for you.
Yeah, there are, you know, I can't speak to other practice areas, but I can tell you, because family law touches everybody in some way, shape, or form, that there are people, educated, savvy people that may not have a direct referral to a family lawyer, and may just want to research for themselves what the best fit would be. But there is, you know, the internet is not what it was 10 years ago or 12 years ago, and people are looking for qualified representation on the internet. And that's not to say that every firm is for everybody that has enough to spend on internet marketing, but it is a way to certainly get your name out there and make sure that a client, because you can use a website obviously to educate clients or potential clients, and to blog and to, you know, do all sorts of things that you know, that really wasn't sort of prevalent 10 years ago.
You know, as we talk with folks who listen to this program, and I'm grateful to all that do, more and more everybody says, you know, they love hearing about stories of success and other attorneys that have done well and love to learn the lessons that they've experienced. But even more so, they really like to hear about the mistakes that other people have made so as they may avoid them. So I'll ask you, Spencer, what's the biggest mistake or the costliest error that you've made in building your practice?
Yeah, one of the challenges has always been finding the right fit in terms of employees. And I don't know that that's specific to me, but we have tried all sorts of different things in terms of finding the right fit for employees, whether that be headhunters, whether that be recruiting firms, whether that be ad space in your local, you know, bar magazine, all those sorts of things. And really, you know, all of that is very costly. I don't, you know, how much the listeners know about the commission fees that are associated with these recruiting firms, but they are very, very, very high. And from my standpoint now, you know, it is worth taking the time to really get a direct referral for somebody that's looking to practice as opposed to using a headhunter. I just think it's a more intimate, less costly process. I don't know that I would use a headhunter again or a recruiting firm again, not only because of the costs that are associated, but because, you know, you really are confined in certain ways to knowing who that person really is and whether or not they're actually a good fit. And so, figuring out, and I certainly haven't done it yet, but figuring out how to vet qualified candidates for a position and unqualified candidates for a position is a very challenging thing for me.
I hear the Rockville fire engines there.
Yes.
In my old office, that was a constant. Well, you know, it's interesting that you bring up the issue of staffing and hiring specifically. I did a show a couple of weeks ago based on an article that came out about the challenges that small and solo firms face going forward. And I was stunned to discover that staffing and hiring was not anywhere on the radar in this survey or this study, which from every attorney that I talked to in the space, that's always a challenge, finding the right person for the right job. And so I just find that kind of interesting.
Well, especially because the market is so saturated. I mean, everybody right. seems to be going to law school right now, and everybody seems to be graduating, and everybody seems to be looking for work. And I don't know that everybody's looking for the small firm experience or the solo experience, but you know, there's a lot of applicants out there. But finding the right balance between you know, hunger for knowledge and motivation and experience, all of those things are incredibly challenging to find a combination of. It is a difficult process to find the right employees for your firm.
I had a friend of mine who would always say you that he would hire based on personality, because you have to work with that person, you have to get along with them, they have to be a team member, and then the process of being a lawyer would sort itself out. And if they weren't a good lawyer, well, you know, the question answered itself. So that's just one approach. Spencer, it's been a delight chatting with you. We kind of reached our time limit here. I think there's a number of things that we could go into further about the success of your firm. I've watched it from the sidelines here, and you're to be commended for what you've done with your practice. Tell our audience a little bit about how they may go about reaching out to you and touching base with you if they want to follow up and or have a question.
Yeah. And first of all, Neil, I just wanted to thank you. This has been a long time coming. I know that the Law Entrepreneur has really picked up and has gained quite the audience. And it is.
Thankfully, it has. Yes, thanks.
And it's an honor to be a part of that. The firm is Hecton Associates. We are located in downtown Rockville, Maryland, which is, again, the county seat. And we're located at 111 Rockville Pike, and that's in Rockville, Maryland. Our firm can be found on the internet at www.hectassociates.com. Hect Associates is all spelled out. It's one word, and the associates is plural.
And we'll have all that in our show notes as well.
Absolutely.
And I noticed you recently redid your website. Did you do that yourself, or did you outsource that?
Oh, no, we outsourced it. We, over time, we have gone with different providers to service our internet needs, internet marketing. And, what I've learned is that every 5 or 6 years is a good time to do a refresh of your website to keep things new and exciting and different. And, I guess that goes against this principle of not fixing anything that's not broken. But it is nice to have a fresh look every once in a while, that's for sure.
Well, it looks great.
Thank you so much.
All right, Spence, thanks ever so much for being on The Law Entrepreneur, and we'll catch up with you next time.
Thanks, Neil.
So there you are, fellow law entrepreneurs, Spencer Hecht. I hope you enjoyed that interview. I did. Be sure to join us over on our Facebook page or meet us on our Twitter account or come visit us at our website. You can find us just about anywhere by searching on The Law Entrepreneur, or drop me an email at Neil, N-E-I-L, at The Law Entrepreneur. I'd love to hear what you'd be interested in for future episodes, or what your challenges are that you'd like to see addressed on a future show. So until then, thanks again to our sponsors, Daylight by Market Circle and Spotlight Branding, and we'll see you next week on The Law Entrepreneur.